Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, the Tricky Kid Writer.
I'm not doing it like that. I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your Hover News, Reviews, Slightly Antagonistic Banter, and much, much more. Why aren't you doing it like that, Eric?
I'm just not going to. I'm not playing your game. I do like watching you grin about it, though. Hey, handsomeites. Grin? With smiles?
Oh, you're turned into a robot, briefly.
Okay, I apologize that I morphed into a robot.
You did, but yeah, we're back again. Talk about comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And other things, like comic books.
And then, just to change it up, we'll talk about some comic books.
Yes, heard you like some comic books, so we're going to talk about comic books and your comic books.
Yep.
Oh, we're not reading Grant Morrison this week, so we can't do that. But we are talking about Black Sat later on.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited to talk about that as well.
We've had to avoid talking about it all weekend.
Yes. We've seen each other, and we went, oh, we like it, but we can't talk. We're not allowed to talk about comic books without recording it.
Yeah, it's a sad life we live.
Sad, sad life. But without further ado, I think it's time for the floppiest part of the week.
Oh my dear God. Could it be time for weekly floppies?
It is. It is time for weekly floppies. Weekly floppies is the part of the show where Eric and I talk about the week's books, tell you buy or do not buy them.
So I gotta say I'm liking this new order. The floppiest part of my week is just a little bit earlier.
It's a little bit earlier, but then it's over. You have to wait just as long for that again happens again.
I know. It's like Christmas.
Christmas is coming up.
It is coming up.
All you have to do is go outside and look at stores.
Starts on the 1st of November.
Yep, pretty much. First up in weekly floppies is DC Books of the Week is Gotham Academy, number 2.
Woo!
Woo! Written by Becky Cloonan and Brendan Fletcher. Art by Carl Kerschel. Colors by Geyser with Dave McKeag and John Roche. Letters by Steve Wands. I still like this book.
This book, it's ridiculously adorable. I mean, it's absurd how adorable this book is. It also makes no sense that Hogwarts is now in Gotham City.
Not really, but
0% sense. But I don't care.
Yeah. How long do you think before we have a professor as a Batman villain? If not, I mean, look,
they all look like Batman villains. Like, absolutely.
I'm waiting for, like you just mentioned Harry Potter, I am waiting for we get a Defensive Against the Dark Arts teacher situation.
Yes. All of a sudden, Alan Rickman's in this comic.
I'm all for that. Put Alan Rick in all my comic books. I'm a fan.
I think so. I wish I could do an Alan Rickman impersonation. I can't.
I think we all want to do that.
You'd think I could, like, kind of do one, but I can't. I've never been able to pull one off. Except for, like, a microsecond.
But yeah, this is continuing the intrigue and mystery and darkness, and it's interesting, more background characters, more background in general. We have multiple more, like, peeks at a couple different professors, and a dark ceremony.
Yep.
Involving a journal of a ancestor of the Penguin. I'm assuming they're related.
I think that's how ancestors work.
Well, I'm assuming that if it's a Cobblepot, it's a relative of.
Okay, so you know, that's
the one Cobblepot we know.
Right, that's the leap that you're making.
That's a crazy leap I'm making there.
Right.
But yeah, the art, I like the art, I think, more in this one than I did in the first one.
It's charming as hell.
This whole book, charming.
Mm.
Charming, fun.
I would go further out of my way to describe it, but I just want to snuggle it. I just want to cuddle it. I just want to give it a big old hug.
As a lot of these new Bat books, especially this and Batgirl, nice diversions from the typical Batman fare.
Yeah.
Which we have kind of grown tired of if you listen to us regularly. This is different and interesting.
Yeah. And it's clear DC is trying to create new readers.
What?
You know, get new people to read their things and then continue to buy their books. And I think that this is a great way to do that because this book is fucking great.
Yes, buy it. I'm a buy.
Yeah, I'm a total buy on this.
Double buy.
How would you compare the art in this book versus the art in the ad at the end of this?
It's quite a sudden shift.
It really is. This guy with like 16 abdominal muscles. He's just a little too tall.
That is Deathstroke.
I realized it is. Yeah, I realize it's fake DC. Deadpool with girl DC Deadpool.
poor New 52 Harley Quinn.
Yeah, I know.
But, oh my God,
that is not a drawing that I like. I will not call it a bad drawing. That is not a drawing that I like. That is pretty wretched.
I like this book. So you should buy this book. Gotham Academy. Buy it. Tell DC that you like this.
And hopefully not the Deathstroke cover.
The comic book is probably going to sell too many copies. For
I imagine so, and this will probably be canceled next week.
Yeah, we like anything we like. It just, you know,
yes.
Thrown in the garbage.
Hey, this is funny and cute and really fun. I like it, so it's necessarily canceled.
Next up in DC is Action Comics number 36, written by Greg Pak, art by Aaron Cooter, Will Quintana doing colors, Carlos M. Mangual on letters. We haven't been reading Action Comics because we did like it there for a bit. I really enjoyed a couple issues we read, but then they went on like a giant Superman crossover where he became like part Doom.
What does that mean?
Doomed. He was doomed, and then he was like Doomsday. He was Doomsday Superman. Okay. Yeah,
comes back, and he's Zach Galifianakis Superman.
This is also taking place after, I guess, the Brainiac like Future Zen thing. I guess. I don't know. They don't give you any kind of idea. Like they just kind of you're supposed to pick up through context clues that now he is bearded Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of this is like a horror kind of comic. A
little bit.
You know, Lana's parents are died, apparently.
John Candy gets killed by monsters.
John Candy does get killed by these weird monsters, and there's like a fall. It's like a horror Superman comic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this as much as the ones we read before.
I enjoyed it okay. It's not amazing. It just sort of fell a little flat for me, but it wasn't horrible.
No, yeah. I'm not calling it bad, but
mm-hmm.
It felt a little bit melodramatic.
No kind of melodrama really bothered me. I mean, I like this Lana as a character. I like, you know, what she's going through, and I like that she's sort of, I don't know, she's having trouble explaining it, and I don't know. She's really... The complexity of it is interesting. I mean, it's not exactly complex that, you know, her parents are dead, but I like the way she's reacting, and I enjoy this book, but it is a little, eh. If any of that makes sense. If any of that insane rambling sounds like something that a person should say.
I mean, I do like Aaron Cooter's art.
Oh yeah.
I think he felt more suitable for that weird subterranean monster things than like the horror. Like this, I don't know. I think this is like this darker, grimmer stuff. I do like the fight scene with all the splatter everywhere, but and Superman getting his hands dirty on slimy things. But I don't know. I think I'm a do not buy.
I'm not going to go out of my way to recommend it. There's no compelling reason I can give to buy it, so I'll go with do not buy as well.
Okay, so that's a double do not buy. Action Comics number 36 with Beardy Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Next up is Sixus in a Marvel box.
Sixus!
Well, Axis number 4. if those who are not...
If you
look at the logo, it looks like it's a Sixus.
Yes, it does.
And then you can't get it out of your head, because then you can't just think, oh, it's Sixus, but it's Axis.
I was looking through the wrong letter for the comic, because we have now made me retarded.
This is Axis number 4, but Inversion chapter 1, written by Rick Remender, pencils by Lineo Francis Yu, Jerry Langland, and Lineo Francis Yu doing the inks, Edgar Delgado colors, Chris Olopoulos on letters. Yes, if you notice the title, Inversion, that title means that every superhero in this comic book just starts acting like a crazy person.
Yeah, it's...
Not like... everyone's just changed instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Carnage is now like Spider-Man. And Tony Stark is drinking champagne and talking to it. And the Hulk is
It makes sense that Tony would talk to champagne. He's a recovering alcoholic.
Do all recovering alcoholics literally talk to their alcohol?
It's supposed to be this dramatic moment, like, oh shit, he's off the wagon.
I know it's supposed to be.
Well, why don't you understand that he's like, oh, old friend? why doesn't that make sense? That you gotta be like, he's talking to a drink. Oh, that's dumb.
No,
I think it's dumber that this Doc Green thing ended, like, that's like a record.
No, I don't think it's over. See, don't you understand it? Because he got inverted, now he's not smart. And then he turns into, like, Patch Wolverine, and his name's backwards, and he's called Claw.
That's the worst. I wanted to vomit when that happened. I think I willfully forgot that was at the end of this book. What the hell?
And then why is Kid Apocalypse now just regular Apocalypse?
I know.
What happened? That was very sudden.
Yeah, it's pretty abrupt.
All it took was like some Scarlet Witch and Doctor Doom magic mixed with Red Skull, and now, hey, Apocalypse here.
To be fair, that is kind of a lot.
I guess it is, but this Apocalypse marches out, and like, who am I cheering for in all this?
I don't think you need to cheer for anyone. You just need to. This is a book for you to roll your eyes at until you pass out.
I was hopeful after the third one. I'm like, maybe it will get better.
You know what? What is great about this issue?
Lineo Francis Yu?
Yeah, but I like him. Specifically.
What is that?
Return of the Miranda Shot. Page 23.
You're right. It is there. We do get a Miranda Shot, even though it's not as well defined because she's wearing like a dress thing. But
well, it is kind of giving her a wedgie. So
it's Lineo Francis Yu. He has to fit it in there.
It's true.
I think I'm off this. I'm off. We're not reading this anymore. I hesitate to do that because it had like things are actually happening in it.
Yeah.
But it is painful for me to read this. I don't know what is happening. I do not have any interest in any of these characters. I find them all repugnant. All the things I liked Kid Apocalypse. Now he's just regular Apocalypse, and everyone's acting like villains. I don't.
Yeah.
When Carnage is the most interesting thing in your comic book, that's a bad thing. I mean, Lineal Francis Yu art is always great. I really like him. He's one of my favorite artists. I'm not going to be reading this anymore. I don't like it. I'm a do not buy. This is bad. This is very bad.
I'm pretty sure that someone's like letting their kid write this. It's pretty wretched.
After everything that happened in Uncanny X-Force with Genesis, with Evan, with Kid mm-hmm. Apocalypse, in two issues, suddenly like that. Just like no lead up to it. He's just suddenly, oh, he's Apocalypse now. All my goodwill, poof, out the window. Do not buy.
Blech.
There you go. Double do not buy. Access number 4. Ugh. Marvel, what's happening, Marvel? What are you doing? Make me upset.
This book is well worth being upset over.
Made me car sick.
That and not all that driving.
Well, that too, probably. Next up is Spider-Verse Part 1. It's in Amazing Spider-Man number 9. Written by Dan Slott, art by Oliver Coipel. He's French. I don't know how to pronounce it. Justin Ponsor doing the colors. Chris Alopoulos doing letters. This is the big spider event. They've been leading up to this for a while. That Gwen Stacy book that you had mentioned was mm-hmm. part of that, was the introducing multiple new Spider-Men. So just so they could be a part of this crossover event. There's all the Marvel multiverse, like, are all their Spider-Men are like, I don't know how to explain what the hell is happening in this book, but there's big evil guys that look, they're like spirit vampires, but they only work on Spider-Men? I don't understand.
Yeah, it really does not make an awful lot of sense about why in the hell they're going after Spider-Men only.
They look like Bram Stokers.
They're
all Draculas.
They're all Draculas. Not a Blackula amongst them.
No. But they're Peter Parker, our Peter Parker is at the core of this for some reason. But we get to meet many, many Spider-Men. Many Spider-Mans, including the Spider-Ham, Peter Porker.
That's a callback.
We get 2099 Spider-Man. We get Gwen Stacy Spider-Man, of course. We get Mayday Parker Spider-Man. All kinds of... Bruce Banner... Poor Bruce Banner Spider-Man did not make it.
Nope.
One Spider-Man, they don't tell you his identity for some arbitrary reason.
It's just going to turn out to be Uncle Ben.
It probably is Uncle Ben. This book is a little too glib for me. The art is beautiful.
The art is very nice.
The book looks great, but them mixing breaking the fourth wall multiple times. Maintain a tone. We have characters interacting with their captions. Like they can, like Gwen Stacy, it's fun, but it makes no sense. Literally, I don't understand anything about this. It's mixing a lot of that totem stuff that J. Michael Straczynski introduced, and then they got rid of it, and now they're talking about the totem, animal totem stuff again, and the webs that connect the unit. What? I don't know.
I think
Eric,
you're...
what do you think? Tell me what you think about this, Eric. I don't know what to think about this.
Honestly, I'm nowhere near as down on it as you are.
Okay.
I mean, it is... Don't get me wrong. It is dumber than a bag of rocks. It is dumb as hell. These vampires are stupid characters. This is a Spider-Man event story that I'm actually intrigued by. It's something a little bit different. I love Spider-Man. Spider-Man was what made me start reading comics. And I haven't seen a Spider-Man event story. When is the, can you think of the last Spider-Man event story that you've liked?
What I liked. Well, Brand New Day was good, but the problem was that it was preceded by One More Day, which was the biggest pile of horse shit ever.
Well, I don't know. I thought those were the same thing. So I've not read.
They were right after there. One More Day, and then yes. Right after it was Brand New Day. So Brand New Day was good, but I don't think it was. It had nothing to do with why. I mean, I don't even want to get started about that big pile of retcon unnecessary garbage.
Well, that's fine. I think it's really hard to do a Spider-Man event right. I am intrigued by this just simply because of all these different flavors of Spider-Man. I think that's really it. That fascinates me. That's interesting. I don't care for these villains. I think that this is fairly dumb. I kind of want to see where this is going. I want to give it at least the benefit of the doubt and see what these characters are going to do together and where this goes. I mean, I'm not going to call this a great work of literature, but it is a stupid comic book that I can actually enjoy. And I don't always feel that way about stupid comic books.
Yeah, I think I'm a buy as long as it's Oliver Quipel drawing it.
It is hot looking. It is great.
Yeah, that's my main problem with the current Amazing Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
is that it has
Hermetro Ramos on everything.
Yeah. What were your comments about, like, button eyes or something on?
Yeah, button eyes, and everyone looks like they've just been slapped.
Yeah, exactly.
I do want to say something, and this is not necessarily something that disturbs me at all, but okay. I want to see. There are a lot of dudes laying around in bed in their underwear in the comics we've read this week. I want to know how Marvel and DC are both like, let's send out a memo. We need dudes in their underwear. We need some crotch shots.
Yeah. Yes, this is our Peter Parker. Stop looking at his butt. What? What?
Yeah.
The art, Spider-Man, any Spider-Man story with good art is probably gonna make me want to read more of it. I you have to turn your brain off for this.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, you get, like, feedback loops and it just starts exploding inside.
You don't,
not good.
You don't need to, don't try and understand the story. Just be like, yes, space traveling vampires. Of course.
Okay. Amazing Spider-Man number 9. We're double buy. The Spider Misgivings.
Sound like you said Spider Misgivings. Uh-oh.
Spider Misgivings. Spider Givings. Uh-oh. Stop looking at his butt. Okay, finally.
I can't help myself.
Finally, our Indie Book of the Week. Tooth and Claw, number 1. Written by Kurt Busiek, Benjamin Dewey on art, Jordi Belair on colors.
Because she colors everything.
Well, she didn't cover any of the other books this week. She took a week off and only did one comic.
Yeah, she still works a full-time job.
John Rochelle, Jimmy Betancourt of Comic Craft on letters and design. I picked this book to read just on the strength of Kurt Busiek. Every Astro City we've read has been great.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually kind of works with the fact, you know, it's all animal characters.
Yeah.
And we are reading Black Sad this week as well.
I kind of wish that we could save this to the end, because I would want to, and I guess we can talk about it when we read Black Sad, because I want to talk about the art in this compared mm-hmm. to Black Sad, and it seems dumb to even talk about something that we're not discussing yet.
Well, we can shelve it for until later. But yeah, we can say I do enjoy the art.
It's very good. I guess I will go ahead and talk about it a little bit. It is comparatively very rigid. Black Sad is cartoonish and loose, and it's full of energy and communicates emotion extremely well. This is none of those things. This is like wildlife art of animals, and it's strange looking in a lot of places. These Spuds McKenzie dogs, they don't really communicate enough human emotion, where they're just sort of arbitrarily the animals that they are, while the characters in Black Sad, they're the animals they are to communicate something about their character. You know, like, this animal has this kind of face or this kind of shape or, you know, these kind of eyes or whatever, so it can communicate something about the character. This doesn't seem to be... This doesn't seem to be saying that.
No, it's not as straightforward, at least.
No.
I think there is a little bit in it, mainly that, I mean, the basic... A lot happens. This is a very long issue. It's 42 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff that happens in this book. It sets up a lot of plot really well.
Yes.
Yeah, Kurt Busiek knows how to write a comic book. But we're given the idea that basically there's this caste structure of society where there's these certain, like, basically magic users who float above the earth in, like, this floating city.
It's exactly like in Chrono Trigger.
And I'm curious if Kurt Busiek knows what Chrono Trigger is.
I
don't think he does, but it's possible.
He's probably, if he's not probably exactly my age, probably not.
No, people probably are tweeting it at him.
Yeah. This is just like Chrono Trigger. We're stealing stuff.
And they interact with basically the blue collar, the laborers, manual laborers down on the earth. And they are, I don't know if there are just, it's just like this, these buffalo / bison, if there's any other kind of animal that does the work down below. You don't see any. There's a dog I see in one of the scenes in the background carrying
riding a giant cockroach
there's that character as well later on, but you don't, I don't know, the races up on the magic users are all kind of varied. There's not, you know, there's all kinds of animals, and well, down below it seems like it's more, I don't know, homogenous. I'm not sure. There's not enough story to be told. But apparently, the magic is running out. They try and do something to save it. Bad things happen.
Yep.
But the world is very rich, and I'm very interested to see what happens. It's setting off a lot of story potential.
Yes.
And you're getting a lot of story in this book. There's a lot that happens in this.
And if it seemed like I was, like, very critical of the artwork, it is by no means bad.
No, it's very good.
It's just, compared to Black Sad, I mean, it's almost an unfair comparison.
Well, they're different.
They are different, but I think I would almost prefer the artist from Black Sad to do this story, just simply because I think emotionally it would communicate better. But it's not bad this way. It's just a little rigid. It's a little cold to me. But it is very, very, very well drawn.
Well, the story is, it is called Tooth and Claw. I'm curious as if that is, I don't know, that kind of coldness is purposeful or not.
It's hard to say. And only time will tell where it goes.
Yeah, but I'm certainly intrigued by it. This is a story I'm interested in. I'm want to keep following it. Very good creative team. From Dark Knight? I believe in Harvey Dent. I believe in Kurt Busiek. I believe in Kurt Busiek. I am a buy.
I'm a buy as well. You think this is trying to hearken to, I don't know, other fantasy stories, Conan or Prince Valiant?
I think it's unavoidable.
It just seems like it's patterning itself after something. Exactly what that is, I don't know.
I see a lot of, I mean, it's very hard to do a fantasy story without including tropes from that have other fantasy stories have used.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in this has gone precisely as I expected it to. It could go many different directions, and there's a lot of interesting. It did the thing last week when we read Southern Bastards, where you get a couple pages of like, well, it just goes, here's like different parties, different characters that are going to have to be reckoned with. They're going to be making appearances, and I'm the fox or wolf riding a cockroach or whatever it is, but along with all the laborers, they're coming to see the city, and they have this great champion apparently awakened, but we don't know, and I'm intrigued. We probably follow up on this.
Let us hope so.
Yeah. So it's Tooth and Claw number one, double buy. Oh, I've not had time to read any other comics this week, even though I bought them.
Well, that's the important thing. Throw your money away.
I will read them eventually. It's not tonight. With that, I think the Floppy's part of the week is over. Wah, wah. Sad trombone.
We can talk about all the other things that you bought and didn't read.
That's next week. But with that, I think with Week Flops over, it is time for Checking In. Checking In is part show where Eric and I talk about what up to during the week.
I can't talk.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Lost okay. My mouth controls.
Put some marbles in there.
Yep. Eric, what have you been up to? What do you got? What are you checking in with?
I'll tell you what I got. I got the best goddamn birthday present ever.
What?
Can you imagine? Yes, 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 Handsomeites, the biggest nerd in the world who hosts this podcast with me, bought me an original page from King City. Holy crap.
Well, it seems like something you should own.
Yeah, and I do. Thank you. God.
You're the world's, if you're not going to buy it for yourself, someone's got to do it for you.
Apparently so. I'm glad you're here to tell me what to do.
Well, someone has to take control. You have to grab the reins.
Daddy Warbucks here. Did you see I put it on Twitter and B. Graham, Royal Boiler, retweeted it?
Oh, cool. I did not see that he retweeted it.
Yeah. I took a picture of it next to the page. It took me forever to find it in King City. That book's really long.
It's a big book. Yeah. It's a lot.
And I knew roughly what part it was from or what had happened before it, but it took me a surprisingly long amount of time to find it. And it was really fun to see it and compare it to, you know, the page in the book versus the original. But yeah, I even took it to the comic book store and showed it off.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was really happy with that. But I have to find a place of honor in my humble abode for it. Right now, my walls are pretty full.
You got a Brandon Graham shrine?
I don't yet. My Dave Stevens shrine fell apart.
You summoned his ghost.
It was definitely Dave Stevens' ghost. So that's what I'm checking in with. Ghost of Dave Stevens.
Cool.
Haunt me. I did read on my trip to the comic book store today, I picked up a really cute book that we should do for book club.
Ooh, what is it?
It is a book by Cory Doctorow. You're familiar with Cory Doctorow?
That name sounds, yes, oh, yes.
Blogger for Boing Boing. Yeah, he's written several fiction novels. Pretty cool guy in general, like active with the EFF. Really neat dude. I'm a big fan of the Corey. but he did a book with, I'm not sure if her name is Jen Wang or Jen Wong. I've known someone that spelled his name W-A-N-G and pronounced it Wong, so now I am confused. So it is Jen Wang, spelled like Jen Wang, possibly okay. Jen Wong. I don't know. I am a Either. Riri.
One of those things.
The book is called In Real Life, and it is very new, within a week or two.
Oh, okay.
And it is the story of, it's a little more complicated than that, but it's just sort of at its core, it's about a young little chubby girl who starts playing WoW and develops like this own little, has a little adventure based around her. Her sort of characters, her avatar, you know, her her WoW character, and it's really cute. It's a really fun story. I liked every I don't know everything about it is really truly excellent. I'm not
that, sound, that
I'm,
sounds interesting.
Well, I hope so. I don't feel like I did a good job of being a salesman but it's it's adorable. The art is beautiful. I've been following Jen for quite some time, and this is the first thing of hers I've actually bought. It's up until now just been stealing pictures off the internet and saving them. But this is adorable. It's a lot of fun. It is another good little book with a female protagonist, and it is cute as a button, and there's a cat butt.
Stop it, Danger.
Is that what you're checking in with, cat butts?
No, I'm not. I really wish I could get the cat from climbing up here. But, no, I am checking in with a couple things. One thing I forgot to check in with last week, and now I'm going to check in with this week. And then the other thing is a first for Handsome Boys Comics Hour history. I think so. I think. I can't recall. You can correct me if you can remember.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, Ink Studs. I've checked in on that before. Specifically, I had the interviews with Fraction and Kelly Sue.
Mm-hmm. We did talk about that.
Yes. But this one is with Farrell Dalrymple, who wrote and drew Wrenchies, which we had done for Handsome for Book Club 3 weeks back, I believe, 3-4 weeks.
It's been I think it's been more than 3 or 4 weeks.
Really?
It's
time just flies.
Time definitely flies, but it has not been forever ago when we did the Wrenchies.
It's relatively recently.
Yes.
And we made they talk mostly about Wrenchies. Mm-hmm. They talk a lot of, you know, it's Brandon Graham is still, he's still involved. So it's him and Farrell and Robin McConnell, I believe is the name of the host. And they talk a lot. They're all buddies. So there's a certain level of familiarity there. They talk a lot about the Wrenchies, but we had a lot of kind of hearsay about how it all was put together and his motivations and all that. And pretty much all our beliefs were pretty much affirmed.
Can you expound on that? I'm really curious what I'm right about.
Like his ethos on art. He talks somewhat some about that, about the writing process, about... I don't know about how they, we had a brief discussion about indie art in general.
Yes.
And they talk about the touch on that and how they look at art and, you know, not willing. I can't really do it justice because the podcast is like an hour and a half long, yes.
But it's the whole, like, I can't compromise.
Yes.
The anything. It's got to be my precious thing and the most awful thing ever, or even if no one buys it.
Right.
Yeah. So this is...
Yeah. Yes.
Right. So I...
Yes.
I don't know quite what to think about that. And I'm going to have to listen to this.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Hearing them talk about it, it's interesting. I don't necessarily agree.
Yeah.
I think we kind of came to that conclusion when we discussed Wrenchies. But they make their case, and I can respect them for their... I mean, certainly, he's a very talented artist. I think you've told me this when we're not recording, but, you know, you if he had, I don't, if he was more focused and less freewheeling with his, you know, this is my art, I don't want to,
right,
you know, kind of that kind of idea, it might be more enjoyable. But then again, I don't know, it's interesting. I'll say that. I don't want to say someone's right, but it's because when you're talking about art, it's very, I wouldn't necessarily say there's a right way to do anything, but.
Well, I know if I like making art for a living, and I don't want to have to work at Starbucks while I do it.
Yes.
So, you know, if other people are going to say, hey, this could be more appealing or better if you do this, I don't think there's a problem with trusting their, you know, their opinion or making art that is for other people, you know, making art with other people in mind, you know.
I agree with you.
I know Kurt Vonnegut said, you know, when you're writing, write it for some one person. Think of one person at least and say, well, this is something that this person would find funny. I think that's a good way to at least ensure that one person on Earth enjoys it.
Yes, exactly. Right. The other thing I want to talk about, this is the first, I think it's the first, you can correct me again, it is a hip-hop album.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if we've ever recommended it. We don't really recommend music too often.
And I can't remember you ever talking about hip-hop.
I really don't. It's a
outlier. Rarity. A rarity for you.
Yes. It is called Run the Jewels 2. The group's name is Run the Jewels.
Okay.
They recently got the headlines, at least on Reddit I saw it, where there's a Kickstarter to remix this album with the beats being entirely cat sounds.
What?
And it was successfully funded, so this album will eventually be re-released, remixed with cat sounds as the beats. But it is, the group's name is Run the Jewels. This is their second album. So the first album was Run the Jewels, now they have Run the Jewels 2. It is comprised of Killer Mike and LP. LP is, he's in the Weathermen. He's like a very relatively well-known guy in indie hip-hop or alt hip-hop. I do not have the most nuanced worldview as Eric. I rarely talk about hip-hop at all. And I don't really listen to a bunch of it, so I'm not going to try and say I can't compare it to a lot of things.
That's what's killing me. I could probably vocalize something. I'm not a hip hop like scholar or anything.
Right.
But I could at least say, oh, it sounds like X, Y, or Z, or it sounds like East Coast hip hop versus, you know, West Coast. I mean, just something vague that I can put out there that makes it sound like this is an album that sounds like it has music on it.
It's hard for me, like most music, I don't know. I feel like I can't necessarily articulate why I like even any music over another style of music, even between like genres I delve all deeply into, like metal. I can't even say why I like this band versus that band necessarily. Sometimes it's very difficult to describe why this and hip hop. It's the same reason why there's so much there. And I wanted, if I really start listening to it before I decide, no, I don't like it, is I want to do it justice. It's just hard to know where to go and what to listen to and what's the considered essential, quote unquote. But this is very good. I really like it. You should listen to it, Eric. I think you would like it.
I like quite a lot of hip hop, so I'm interested to see what it sounds like. My all of my web browsers have decided to stop working, so I cannot look it up right now.
It's on Spotify. It's on RDO. It's on all the streamings.
Stream all the things.
All the stream music's places. It's there. I like it. I suggest it. I recommend it. Even people who don't necessarily listen to hip hop, which is probably, I would say that I am atypical for comic book readers in general. But give it a shot, even if you don't necessarily listen to a lot of hip hop, because it's very good. It's really enjoyable. It's gotten me going. Like, I should listen to more hip hop because I haven't given it an actual fair shot. Yeah.
Hip hop is super good.
But I believe that's it for checking in.
Yep.
Got some interesting stuff there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo! Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Old...
Macho. He was here for
just
a second.
Just whizzed right by.
And then he vanished. Yeah, it happened.
It's incredible. How does this
happen? I don't think it's canon that I know that he's here, but no, I don't think it matters.
It's okay. We'll retcon it in our podcast. It'll be fine.
Next, we're going to finish up this week with our last segment of the week, and that is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. You clicked. I thought you were going to say something. Nerd Boy Book Club.
I don't. I'm not supposed to speak. I know my place.
It's about time. Nerd Boy Book Club is a part of the show where Eric and I will assign, quote unquote, a longer collected work in generally, and we'll discuss it. You know, discuss its themes, its art, and a little more in depth than we generally do get to in floppies, like a book club.
Just like it.
Get it? This week we are doing. Oh, hint.
Hence the clever name is what I was trying to say. But then we were talking over each other. Hooray.
This week we are doing Black Sad by Juan Diaz Canales and Juanjo Guarnido. Black Sad is a noir detective story.
Mm-hmm.
Or stories. There's three chapters, three different separate stories in this hardcover that I have. And there are multiple other publications that I'm going to go buy shortly after this.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how good this was. But I think the thing that struck me even before I began reading it was, my God, this book is gorgeous.
It is incredibly beautiful. And it really is. It's unfair that this exists. Comparing it to Tooth and Claw, which is a beautiful book. This kicks the ass out of it. It is ridiculous how good this looks. This has, I mean, he's a Spanish cartoonist, but I find that their tradition of cartooning is not too far off. It's got a lot of the same influence of your Asterix and your Mobius and all of these just virtuoso drawers, you know. It's, I should say virtuoso draftsman. Drawer like I'm in fucking high school. Virtuoso draftsman. Now I sound like I have an art degree. It's really beautiful. Particularly the later chapters. They're just so tight and clean looking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's remarkable just sort of how the characters pop. The first chapter, I think, is an interesting contrast, as it looks like it probably was the first story he told with these characters, and everything, it's a little difficult to read. Everything's a little mushy. It's difficult to really pick out exactly how it's different, but I would say the line work is pushed back.
Yeah,
and everything
it's a little
fuzzier. It's less contrasty, and I think he really got that nailed by the time they did the second one. And he's really got it dialed in at that point. Everything reads really clean, really good use of color. I think with watercolor and, you know, when you're doing work like this and you're trying to make things atmospheric, it's really easy for things to get really mushy and everything turns doo-doo colors.
Mm-hmm.
This does not. This stays just bright and appealing, and it's just gorgeous. It's virtuoso work for sure. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's unbelievably beautiful. I'm amazed this isn't more popular than it is.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Yeah. The other notable thing is all the characters are animals.
Yes.
They're anthropomorphized animals. There's an introduction by Jim Steranko, who talks a lot about the history about this.
Mm-hmm.
which is really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
But you mentioned briefly when we were talking about Tooth and Claw about that, and it really is the animals they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just willy-nilly, oh, this guy's a mouse, this guy's a rabbit, guy's a lizard.
Yeah, like, this guy's a mouse because he, like, you know, he's timid or he's going to cower or, you know, they're using, like, the shape of that animal to communicate some emotion or some personality characteristic.
Yes.
It's actively saying something. I think Steranko really hit it right on the head.
Yeah, the main character, Blacksad.
John Blacksad.
Yeah, he is a cat. Kitty cat.
He's a kitty cat. Yes, he is, apparently.
I said the word cat. I had to.
Yes.
I had to do that. Yeah, he's a cat. Yeah, there's a rat called, what, Weekly?
He's a ferret.
He's a ferret. Oh, okay.
Weekly is a ferret.
I did not realize.
And that makes a lot of sense because ferrets stink like hell.
Yeah, that's his. We're teased about what his nickname means until we find out much at the end of his story that it's because people called him Weekly because he only bathed once a week. And Black said it up at that time, often commented multiple times about how bad he smells. But, you know, there's a police chief who is a German Shepherd. Like, some heavy bodyguards are a rhino and a bear. You know, they draw upon so smartly about what we associate these animals with through fables and folklore. Like, you don't even think about it necessarily, what you associate just an animal with until you see them in this way, in a story like this, and you go, well, that works perfectly.
I would say my only criticism that I could possibly give about the artwork, all the women, they just look like women with distorted, horrible faces.
It's like true.
In particular, in the whole arc about, you know, the racist chief of police and the whole town that's, the whole Aryan town.
Yes.
And how the two women, I guess you could kind of call them the two femme fatales in that story.
Yeah.
They just have these, you know, they'll make faces and they'll be in positions like, you know, you would see in a film or whatever, you know, a normal human person, except they just look like monsters. And it's really confusing because they're drawn like, hey, I'm all sexy, except I look like a monster. It's kind of horrifying. But, I don't know, oddly charming at the same time.
I think he does try and make them at least feminine, their faces like a feminine animal, like a what we consider. I think there's no, like, they're all cats for as far as I could tell, like all the women. Are there any
the two sisters.
Yeah, are they? What are they, if they're not?
I am not sure. I'm going to say they're some kind of bear. But they've got to be some kind of bear thing. It is inconclusive, though, unless there's some kind of glossary for what in the hell everyone is. It is not clear just from your context.
Yeah.
But I don't know how spoilery do you want to get with this? Because
we're in book club. We can be as spoilery as we want.
That's always what I think. But sometimes we kind of backtrack on that. But this is my favorite story. I read it two or three times.
The racism, the KKK / Aryan Nation, whatever it is.
But it's kind of Chinatownish, you know.
Yes.
And that he ends up, he's like married to his own daughter.
Yeah.
Which is just a little oogie.
Yeah. I think each of these stories touches on a different kind of hallmark of the genre. even in some of them in multiple ways. Especially the latter two tackle issues from the time period as well.
Mm-hmm.
And still today for the racism, of course. But
yeah.
That is the thing that I think struck out the most. You talk about the use of the animals, the making characters the animals, mm-hmm. to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that second story, the one where Blacksad is like trying to tackle a cover up in this racist town, had the greatest impact using that theme of the animals. Because you read this first story, and Blacksad, he's a mostly black cat with a white snout. And there, he's in the big city in the first story. And, you know, there's, you know, a lizard who's blue, and then, you know, the animals are different colors. You don't really think about it, because they're animals.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of colored animals. Like, you know, you don't really think about it in the telling of the story. You just think, oh, that, there's a cat, there's a dog, there's a lizard, blah, 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 blah. But then you get to this second story, and you start seeing this race war between what is their official name? It's like Snowflake or something along those lines. They have a white snowflake as their symbol,
mm-hmm.
which is very, they're, it's a hallmark, obviously.
Yes.
To the swastika. And the only animals that are in this movement are the white colored animals. They have white fur. There's polar bears and pigs and owls and ferrets and all kinds of, but they're only white. And then at this, you didn't even think about it. And then at this point you go, oh, Blacksad is mostly black.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's caught in the middle, but he has this white spot on him. And it puts him out of both groups, because there's also like a Black Panther-esque gang, yes. running around.
And it's, also, it's funny because he is kind of a Black Panther.
It's true. He is kind of like a Black Panther.
Rimshot.
They don't like him because of that white spot. And
they try and mark him up.
And he doesn't like...
I'm
going to murder you if you touch me.
Yeah. Hey, man, can't back down.
No, he is a badass. Blacksad is a badass.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Pulls the guy's own gun on him. He's like, hey, I'm going to shoot you in the guts. Back off, horse face.
You might not want to do something to me. Yeah, yeah, and that it really brings it to effect in going, wow, my protagonist is basically figuratively a black character.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't enter your consciousness until you get to that part.
Yeah, they kind of sneak that in. It would, you could not do this in any other like 50s era noir story. It would be impossible. You would never buy it.
No, but with this, it works because of the fact that they're using the animal.
Mm-hmm.
The first story is a very kind of police corruption. Or not even police corruption, but basically just, you know, a rich man trying to cover up his crimes, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of a by-the-books noir detective story.
It felt kind of like an experiment compared to the other stories, which are, you know, we've really established this interesting character in this interesting world, and it's like, mm-hmm. this playground for this artist to do really interesting things. Why don't we really see where we can go with it?
Yeah, and the second story is the sort of him, Blacksad, combating this kind of racist town, and it is police corruption with the kind of the leader of the town, this polar bear, kind of trying to cover up his crimes, quote unquote. It's hard to, and kind of power struggle in this racist organization. And the last one is a lot about, more political, about like communism and the 50s, about McCarthyism and all that,
mm-hmm.
trying to hunt down the communists, about Nazis and the kind of Nazi assimilation into regular culture after the war, and the threat of nuclear power and bombs and all that stuff. Like you said, I think that first story is really just kind of a toe in the water.
Absolutely.
Testing it, see what the temperature is, and then the other two are like, well, we can actually do something with this. Let's go kind of crazy. I think I actually enjoy the third story the best. I keep coming back to this, where he's trying to protect this professor that Blackset has a relationship with since childhood. And he's like, he saves him from a car bomb for this crocodile character. And just this scene where this car explodes and he's rescued. They're blown away from the wreckage. And this crocodile is like trying to sneak away. And then fucking Blackset tackles him through a storefront window. And that kind of intense, crazy action, I don't think you see. The fact that you see a little bit of him diving through the air in that last panel on the page. And then the next panel on the next page, the top panel, is just him crashing through a plate glass window, tackling the Gavial. That is just brilliant, dramatic action-packed storytelling. That is perfect. I do agree with you. I think the art in the third story is the strongest. The facial expressions are even sharper. Just when he first meets, what is her name?
Cat lady.
The cat. Yeah, her. Just the look on her face is just so good. She's so upset with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the communist beatnik barbecue on the beach.
Just yeah.
Like a billy goat or something reciting Ginsberg. Really enjoy it. The Dalmatian is a drunk asshole.
Good lord, that's like maybe the best drawing I've ever seen. So that Dalmatian, it's friggin' incredible.
Yeah, he's that when he's that him on the stage and he's doing that, I don't know what he's doing. He's telling a joke, but he's like the top on page 131, at least in my version. Did you get the hardcover as well?
I did. I think we have the same one.
Yeah. It's very nice, by the way.
Oh, it is.
As bad as their app is, their hardcover book is very, very nice.
I guess they're more of a 19th century publishing company. None of this fancy 20th century.
21st century.
I know I'm being ridiculous.
In the shots of this.
Never mind, my joke's ruined.
The wolf.
Take my shit and go home.
But you got a lot of it.
That's a deep end joke now.
But
there's a strong theme of misogyny.
Well, yeah, there certainly is that. This is kind of the antithesis of the fatale of Brubaker and Sean Phillips.
Yeah, which, I mean, of course, the antithesis of that fatale is that would be the standard femme fatale.
Yes, exactly.
This is the woman that gets punched in the face, and then she's like, oh. And that's not exactly what happens. I mean, Black Sad is pretty much, I don't know, he's all good. You know, he's not shown as any kind of bad guy at any point. He's completely sympathetic and kind of does no wrong.
Yeah, he is. It's inherent to the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, I think that a lot of noir detectives and, you know, these characters, they're a little muddy, you know?
Yeah.
They might have, I don't know, they could be all manner of problems.
Right.
He's about as clean as they could possibly be. It's interesting that he is just so squeaky clean and sympathetic. But the whole tone of misogyny kind of, it feels less like it's from the characters and more like it's from the writing. Like it's more from the writer's sensibility. Either that or it's really steeped in the world. I don't really read it as that.
I don't know. I don't think it certainly doesn't go out of its way to, I never mm-hmm. went like, wow, that is so misogynistic. I just went, wow, this genre is very misogynistic and they're following along the lines of it very, very simply. The women are here to be rescued. They, you know, the dude is always right, et cetera.
So you think that it's,
I think it's just
as a piece of genre fiction. That's,
I think so.
You can't do it without that trope.
No, you can. And we saw it in Fatale.
Of course.
You can, but they chose not to. And I think in that, like, making that choice is at least showing some sort of, you know, inclination by the writer. But I don't know how deep it goes because I don't see anything like, there's no lady in the refrigerator moment.
Mm.
The women do show a little bit of agency. I mean, the sisters in that central, the middle story, they do try. They're the ones who kind of are the architects of the scam, so to speak. They end up having to get rescued, but there is the woman in the last story. She is, you know, she leaves him. It's not a happily ever after story, and she's doesn't die. There's no like women mutilation or anything like that. For the most part, the second story suffers from a little bit by the one female character getting killed, and the first story I think suffers from the most because mm-hmm. it is about the murder of a woman. But I think the first story is kind of the most cut and paste of these stories.
It kind of is the woman in the refrigerator story, if anything is.
Yeah. So I think the writing is solid.
No, it's very good for something that this is translated, right? This was not written in English.
I didn't see
a note for a translator.
English translations. Nope, this was translated.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this is exactly the kind of thing that gets published in gets published overseas that we have to get translated. But it feels really solid.
Yes,
you know, it doesn't feel like, and that's a tough position to be in. It doesn't list a translator. You didn't just find one, did you?
No, it listed in the very beginning.
It said translation, or did it say translation by?
English translations, Anthea Flores and Patricia Rivera.
That's basically rewriting this book.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a tough job.
Yeah. And it doesn't really feel like it. It doesn't feel like it was ever written in anything but English.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel clunky. At no point does it feel, it is completely transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And normally I'm picky about my translations. I read a lot of manga. And there are a lot of cultural things in a lot of translations. I know some are better than others. Like when I read an Asterix book that's translated into English, they'll just sort of transliterate the jokes. They'll make up some other joke. I think the best manga, they'll explain
mm-hmm.
the joke. You know, like, this is this pun that he's making, and this is why it's culturally relevant, and this is why it's funny. I mean, I don't know. I prefer that, but it does sort of, it is completely not transparent. This works perfectly, and at no point do you feel like you're doing anything other than reading a 50s American noir story.
Well, I think because of that, it's the reason it's transparent, is that it, he may have originally written in Spanish, but it's set in the genre of 50s noir.
Of course.
It's already in a certain kind of thematic language mm-hmm. that is very comfortable for us.
Yes.
For anyone who's even somewhat familiar with the genre, it feels right. And as much as the writing is solid, I think because the visual storytelling is so strong, so good, it makes it shine even more than it already does. It's like playing basketball with LeBron James. Even if you're average, he'll make you good.
So if he played ball with me, I'd make you terrible.
You're not so good at the B-balls?
No. not unless I can punch people. Then I might be okay at
that's
it.
That's not the same game we're talking about then.
Okay.
There's no punching in basketball.
And no crying in baseball.
Nope. Anything else you want to talk about, Eric? I'm trying to... Other than that, this is very, very good.
I know. Jesus Christ. How many times do we have to say it?
Yeah. This might be the best thing I've read this year so far. I'm not going to say it's the best, but it's top five easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's delightful.
They are...
I'm very, very glad to have read it.
Top tier.
Mm-hmm.
So good. And it makes me want to go, we went, oh, well, we can just buy one of the chapters, one of the books. Because there's two other books that's been published. I'm going to go buy those.
You know what it's exactly like that I have the fondest of fond memories of?
What?
Is Disney's Robin Hood. Reminds me strongly of that.
Yeah. I can see it.
A lot of my favorite, or I would say one of my favorite virtuoso artists, it was one of the last projects he did with Disney, and that's Don Bluth.
Mm-hmm.
Don Bluth was one of the lead animators on that. And he, of course, went off to make really beautiful, terrible movies. They were, good God, like the best drawings, so gorgeous. So bad. I'm glad that this virtuoso draftsman has a good solid writer. Like they're really, it's a beautiful collaboration. It works really well. I'm curious. I'm dying to know how long it takes them to draw one of these episodes, because it is when it's really. When he's really showing like a background scene, I mean, he's drawing his ass off.
Yeah.
He's putting so much detail into these pages. I mean, it's bananas. And it's kind of fascinating because it never really feels overdrawn.
No, it doesn't. It's, I don't know if I don't have the vocabulary to describe it, but it,
you can still, you can say something.
It's stunning.
Yeah.
Kim asked me what we were reading this week, and I just, like, she's like, what's that? I'm like, I just showed her the art. She's like, wow, that looks amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
It's great. You should, if you've not bought this, go get it. It's so good. You will not regret it. Get the hardcover. It is something you want to keep and look at a lot.
I don't think they have anything but the hardcover, but even it is reasonably priced.
Yeah, $20 for something like this. Really, really well put together book.
Yeah. It is delightful. The other ones are, I think, similarly priced, and I imagine just as good content. There, it's, I think, top tier, really the right way to describe it.
So next week, folks, for Nerdboy Book Club, Eric had checked in with it earlier in the show. It is In Real Life by Cory Doctorow and Jen Wang, or Wong, depending on how she pronounces it. But, I'm looking at it right now. It looks very intriguing. I'm interested. We're going to read it for you. You guys can go get it. In Real Life, Cory Doctorow, Jen Wong, or Wang, next week.
Woo!
Woo! I think with that, we'll draw this episode to a close. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, other podcatchers of your choice. Please, anywhere you subscribe to us, please rate, review. Do subscribe if this is your first time listening. It really helps us out, gets us new listeners, gets new people find us. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. Like us there. You can find us on Twitter, at HBCHour. We're on Tumblr. You can find me on Twitter, at MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
Well, that's a good question. You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. You can see most of the things I do online by going to ericzgoodnight.com, newly updated. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh.
And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R, Bad Example.
With that, folks, we will call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.